Hello and welcome to another episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness taking place in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in. Welcome to another podcast of Rethink Possible. I'm Bob McDowell, your host, and today I have Dr. Josh Swanson from Eden Prairie Schools with me, and he's going to speak with us about building community trust through developing continuity of direction, really along the lines of that strategic planning and some work that they've been doing for quite a while now. Thanks for being with me, Josh.
Yeah, thanks so much, Bob. It's good to be here today.
So tell me, what do we mean at the 10,000, 100,000 foot level by building community trust through continuity of direction?
Yeah, you know, I think we all know how important it is to build trust within our communities as a public school system, you know, with our parents, with our non-parents, with our business partners, with our other profits, for-profits, not-for-profits, all of those other institutions that we interact with. Because it benefits our kids, and it allows us to lift up the experiences that they engage in. And you know, when we see trust degrade inside of a community, we know that that has a direct impact on schools and what we're able to deliver and what we're able to do, which is the core of our mission as we think about like truly getting at the level of each student and ensuring they have the experience and learning outcomes that we want for them and their families want for them and our community desires as we think about building that. And so, you know, with the importance of that, you know, over time, we've made some really strategic decisions about the things that we do and the way we engage to make sure that we build that over time and continue to deliver on those promises. You know, when we think about like the core tenets of trust, of reliability, you know, do you actually follow through and do what you said you were going to do? You know, sincerity, like when you come and you ask my opinion or you ask for things, do you actually want it? Do you want to hear from me? Do you want to hear my perspective or not? Am I assessing you as sincere? We think about like competence of, you know, can this organization, can people actually pull this off and do that and care? Like, do we have the best interest of our students and our families at heart as we do that kind of work? And so, you know, when we think about those components of trust, and we can think about like the importance of engaging community in that process, our families, our staff, our students, but then making sure that we actually are delivering on that. You know, when we set those things up in partnership and in collaboration, then we need to follow through. And if you're going to follow through, you can't do that in a month or two. You need to do that year after year after year. And so, you know, we've been super intentional about creating some systems and models to do that. And, you know, that shows up with a lot of success in trust with our community over an extended period of time. And so, you know, that was what I was kind of interested in talking about how you do that while continuing to also like innovate and evolve in ways as well.
So when you talk about the fact that there are systems to cycle through, what does that look like at not just at the district level? I'm assuming that's at building levels, potentially even at staff levels.
And you know, and I think at the, you know, and when we talk about district, it's really community. You know, I mean, we're a part of the community and reflective of that. And so, you know, I'll give you a really concrete example. And we're actually right in the process right now of revamping this, like the systemic kind of cycle that we're in. So 9 years ago, we actually spent an entire year engaging the community, talking about what our academic vision would look like for the year 2025, 26. And so we spent that entire year, engaged thousands and thousands of people, students and staff, families, community members, our various partners. And we leveraged a design team to actually come up with what is that experience that we want our students to have 10 years from now. And, you know, I think it was really important at that time to also talk about this is 10 years from now. We have 10 years to implement these concepts and these ideas. And those ideas and concepts were set at a high enough level at that point in time that it still allowed for a lot of flexibility for implementation. So we could do that. And, you know, we were really thoughtful about saying, hey, we're not doing this all next year. We're going to do this over an extended period of time to be able to have continuity of direction. You know, we're infamous in education. I think all of us have probably heard, you know, just wait it out. This too shall pass. And then nothing happens. But, you know, it becomes evident when you start to lay out really publicly, here's the vision, here's the direction, here's how we're going to go. And we're going to do this over an extended period of time. And then you start to follow through with those pieces and deliver on those. It provides stability and direction for staff so they can continue to improve. It allows us to take that student experience that we're desiring and get a little bit better each year and go deeper with things. So we're not doing things just at the surfacey level. And then it allows for our community to see that we're actually doing that and following through as well, which builds excitement with them. So we used this 9-year or this 10-year academic visioning process. We called it Designing Pathways at the time. And at the time, when we listened to our community, we heard the strong need for increased access to early childhood pre-K programming. And we wanted that to the community and our families wanted that to be like in their neighborhood. So, you know, part of that vision was designing increased access to our pre-K programming inside of our elementary schools. They wanted more choice and experience and enrichment for each of our elementary students because, you know, at the time we had some really great programming that was serving some of our students, but not every student was getting to engage in that. That vision called for that design and development. Our middle school students, we had a pretty traditional middle school experience and it was good. I mean, we had good results, but it wasn't the engaging kind of experience that was giving kids like true exploration and different like career pathways and their interests and what might be happening. And so there was a call for how do we really get more authentic in that programming and design and curriculum instruction experience for our students. And, you know, that meant expanding choices and options for our students at our middle school. And they're really starting to blur the lines between K-12 education, higher education, and workforce at our high school through capstone development in various pathways. So, you know, those concepts became the anchor of this vision over 10 years that we wanted to have, and then allowed staff and leaders to be able to start to stand that up over time through some use of good innovation. So very sound, like relatively traditional strategic planning that creates a roadmap, but gives a lot of space to be able to evolve and innovate along the way, which builds buy-in with staff, with the community, and then really allows for us to hear our student voices come forward too.
What does that look like in any given year? Because that is a 10 years is a long trajectory, right? We're going to staff on board, we're going to staff off board, we're going to have community change over the time. What does that look like? Or can you speak to the actual implementation of getting people into the space of being a part of wherever you are in the process?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the key things that it provides that anchor for you. So our strategic planning, our site plans, our department plans, those things that come up in the community, those occur on an annual basis. And so we're able to adjust in real time with that. As things come forward, things occur, we hear additional voices. So we're able to evolve, but we have this marker out here of 10 years from now of like, where are we going to? And one of the things that, you know, I'm really proud of in my time here in Eden Prairie Schools, this is my 13th year in the district, and I'm in my 8th year serving as superintendent. You know, we've been able to follow through and deliver on every one of those promises of that academic visioning process. And this year, we're actually launching our next 10-year academic visioning process. So we're in that process right now of engaging thousands of people in our community again. I actually just started with some World Cafe with some student groups over the last 2 days to hear their voices and ask them to forecast and share with us you know, what would they see the middle school or the high school looking like 10 years from now? What would the experience for students be? What would students be doing? What would teachers be doing? What would they want their future principals and teachers to know about students 10 years from now and the experience? And then, you know, how do they, what do they want to provide for input for the design team that's going to be working on this visioning? And so it provides us this scaffolding and this direction so we can be nimble in between. You know, when you think about like innovation models, you've got your traditional like strategic planning process, largely kind of what I'm naming with like a 10-year visioning piece. But then you can think of like other disruptive innovations that come along that might just like completely replace the way we do something. It might be a lot less efficient and laborious at the front end, but then create a totally different experience down the road. Or, you know, you think about innovation models where you kind of get like the blue ocean thinking of like, my gosh, what are those spaces that just nobody's in right now? And how might we move into that space? Or you think about like human-centered design models where you're truly looking at like that end user experience and you're hearing from the end user, whether it's a family or a student or a staff member that's taking advantage of something. You listen and then you design for them. Or you go like lean startup where, you know, you don't necessarily know what the outcome is. You know, you kind of get into that agile, like quick moving things. And it's like the concept is, hey, we're going to just learn as we go and we're going to keep evolving to wherever this kind of takes us. You know, that 10-year framework allows us to do all of those other innovation, make all those other innovation moves inside of that, depending on the audience or what we're trying to accomplish or the scale of what we're trying to accomplish. And so, you know, we've seen that be a real anchor for that. And as a result, you know, when I go back and, you know, annually we look at trust within the community, our trust levels with our community are at all-time highs. We have amazing trust with our parents and with our community at large for the work that we're doing with students on a daily basis and with our staff across our district. And of course that, you know, then you have trust, you have support. Which means financially we can do the things we need to do to serve students really well day in and day out.
So I'm thinking potentially folks that are listening to this, if I back up to your explanation of kind of this cross-section between traditional strategic planning, innovation, and then inside of innovation, multiple ways of getting at innovation. Mm-hmm. And people going, wait a minute, how do I do that? Like, how do I get my staff to know how to do that? How could you explain or talk people through how you get your leadership team, how you get your teacher leaders, how you get your school board, and maybe even community members to think and understand and implement that how? If I don't know where I'm going and I'm really trying to lean on lean startup, or I want to iterate really fast. How do you get people to actually function in that space?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great question. And, you know, one of the things that we've done over time is provided a lot of thinking and professional development for leaders around change management processes. And really, you know, it gets to the andragogy side of things of, you know, understanding what are adult learners' needs. How do we move in that change management to generate buy-in and have, you know, a stakeholder group that has a strong sense of urgency and the skill set to be able to do that. So, you know, we've offered up through a lot of professional development over time, learning about various change management strategies and processes. And I think that's key. You know, you're developing capacity inside your leadership team to do that, but then also understanding like some of those different innovation models, you know, you want to use those with the right audiences at the right time in the right situation. And so, you know, if you're trying to move an entire building through like an agile process, you know, results might vary. But if you've got a small, nimble team who's really committed to something like that, and you can provide them with enough freedom and flexibility to move in those ways, you know, that's a perfect situation to run that kind of innovation model. And so you need to be selective, I think, depending on your audience, your goals, your outcomes, as to what kind of model you're using. And that's part of that change management kind of art and science to think about as you're supporting people so they can feel successful. You know, there are lots of people in our systems that need a great deal of stability and want to feel highly competent. They need to feel highly competent and know what they're doing before they're going to take that step. You know, that's probably not the person you're going to put out kind of on a cutting edge of something to try something out and change it really fast. But that person is incredibly valuable to your organization and to education. You know, we know that students often thrive in a very stable, predictable environment. You know, that's a key for safety and learning. And so having a really unstable environment might not be the best learning piece. So we've got to identify, like, what are people's different strengths? What's going to be relevant to their job? And then how do we support them to be successful so they can see success in their work? Because at the end of the day, I tell you, I've not met a teacher where when they try something and they see with success with a student, they're not going to do more of that. Like, they care so deeply about our students and student success. They want to do things that help our students be successful. You just need to set up the experiences and environments where they can do that and thrive.
So you've talked about the meeting the objectives that you set out 9-10 years ago. What does it look like to orchestrate and implement that benchmarking along the way? What is it? How do you decide that? The when, the how, the who?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we really also, I think with that 10-year vision and acknowledging at the front side, you're not going to do this all in 1 year. You pick priorities and you pick focus areas. But I think the importance of coming back to that, like year in, year out, about talking about that progress towards those big outcomes that you might have in that vision is really important. And as that vision kind of evolves, that's important as well. You know, as an example, with that, in order for us to be able to, you know, expand those middle school options and choices, and be able to move pre-K, we knew that we needed to actually go through some grade level configuration changes and do a large construction project at our middle school, because we were going to move our sixth graders into our middle school setting from a 6-8 middle school. So, you know, we had 4 or 5 years of work to lay a foundation to have the resources, spaces, change management through all of that to be able to get to that outcome. And so, you know, I think you need to take small steps and you lay that out. And, you know, that happens a number of different ways. You know, as we think about as superintendents working with our school board to bring them along, you lay that vision out, you start to walk through all of those different processes and steps. So board members understand the why things are moving the way they are, and you can bring them along so they can understand and be fully supportive of that. You know, with the importance of engaging all those people at the beginning, that gives you a lot of credibility and buy-in with what your next moves are. And then I think continually communicating out like the successes and where you're at in that process is really key as well. So like your communications team and arm in helping design the strategy of that, and then all of your leaders, your staff, and everybody through the system being communicators continuously. And so people are hearing that movement over time, year in and year out, and you're being really clear with what's being accomplished as you go is, I think, really key to continuing to move that in a way. So, you know, as a result, you know, it took us 4 or 5 years to lay all the groundwork for that middle school change. It's just one part of that big change process in the visioning. But then when we were able to actually bring it to life, you know, our resources and focus were there for those couple of years. So we weren't worrying as much about some of these other projects while that occurred. And then once that one moved, then we could take on the next one and take on the next one. And the nice part is once you get those up and going and you build energy with the teams that are owning that and moving that forward, then, you know, that allows you to build momentum within that team, and you can take and move some resources, time, and attention to something else. Again, showing continuity to the community, and that goes back to those extremely high levels of trust, I think, that we've seen with our community for the work that's been done.
Mm-hmm. You hit on a couple of things, and with that last explanation, with the communication, that made me think about as you move through innovative practices, as you move through the work with the community, and things do need to change, there's always that entry point for staff to become a little resistant in. It kind of gets back to maybe one of your first questions or your first statements around this too shall pass. How do you reach back out to staff? What systems, if anything, do you have in place or modeling with your leaders to try and keep that at bay as much as possible? Because that will always be an automatic entry point, unintentional sometimes, because you are moving through more of an iterative process. Does anything come to mind around that?
Yeah, you know, I think, remember the language you used, it kind of stuck out conceptually to me of like, you're kind of going to always have that barrier, and like, how do you get over that? And I think in some ways you have to embrace that, because you just know, like, that's going to be a reality inside of every system, whether we're in an educational system or a business system or a nonprofit system or in the community. There's always going to be various people that approach like that change process differently. And I think identifying like, what are the needs of that person? Why are they coming at it from where they are? And then thinking about how can we kind of come alongside, and to the extent possible. And there are times where you can't and people have to make different decisions. But there are lots of times where if you can figure out what is that thing that's standing between that person and like moving that direction, what's that fear or what's the status piece or, you know, what might they be nervous about or what might they need more information about? Might they need to see other success or to have some other trusted colleague doing this and coming alongside them? There's all kinds of different kind of strategies you can use there. But, you know, I think that's the importance of, you know, helping your leaders develop those skills to see like in those other people, like what is that barrier and how might you remove that? And how might you bring that person to the table so they feel like they have some ownership stake in this and can help you move in a good way? You know, we've been doing the last couple of years, we've been doing a lot of work around artificial intelligence inside of our system. And I'm actually going to speak at another conference here next week. And we're talking about, you know, how do you leverage artificial intelligence inside of school districts and innovative practice? And I'm talking in terms of what are the on-ramps you can create? So how can you create easy ways, just like you're going to get on a freeway? How do you create easy ways for people to start embracing or leveraging this, whether it's our students or our staff for various uses, to be able to try things, to be able to use that in a way that's healthy? You know, what are the guardrails you put in place? You know, I mean, you think about guardrails along a road, they're there to keep you from ending up in a spot you don't want to end up. And so they're not necessarily to restrict you. We still want people moving on this path, but we want them doing it in safe ways that aren't going to do too much damage, right? And then talking about like accelerators, what are those things that we can put in place or leverage that will actually help us move more quickly when things are working? And so, you know, I think when you can come at things, you know, with some strategies and frameworks for people who might be resistant, to figure out what are those underlying pieces, you know, how can you bring people on, you know, onto those on ramps? How do you have some guardrails so the things you don't want to have happen aren't happening? And you can kind of create some direction for people so there's clarity. And then, you know, when things do work, how do you reinforce those things that you want to have happen and keep them going the direction you want, so that at the end of the day, like our kids are having the experiences and learning the things that we want. And, you know, that's the part that's been really fun over the last 9 years, and watching, you know, our entire staff, you know, we have almost 2,000 staff members, you know, in our district by the time you look at all of the various roles and people that are serving students over the course of a full year. You know, how do you have all of those people in their roles feel empowered to do really good things and create those kinds of experiences You need to keep reinforcing that, and leaders across the system need to keep reinforcing that in healthy ways.
Mm. Yep. So it sounds like at the end of the day, what you've established is some clear vision, the team, the district, the many people involved, a clear vision, alignment with that vision, but at the same time, the opportunity to change, to innovate, to take a left turn if you need to, and all in an effort then to be able to deliver on the promises that everyone agreed to way back at the 100,000 foot level, and here's where we want to go.
Yep.
So my ending question, my last question then is, if the superintendent next door opens up and someone new comes in, or an existing superintendent comes in and says, "Hey, Josh, I want to do what you did," what would the one, two, or three things be that you would say, "All right, if this is what you're going to take on, then here's for sure what you have to stay true to"?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, starting with listening to all the stakeholders and community and really pulling in that voice, you know, you're going to have lots of loud voices in lots of different space, and truly to be able to try to hear from everybody and be able to separate all of that out so you can create, you know, the highest common ground. You know, where are the places that where we can all agree this is the direction we want to go? And I think, you know, starting there before bringing in, you know, a vision of truly listening and engaging that way, I think is an absolutely critical step. I think being committed over time, you know, I think, you know, we all know places where leaders have come in and been there for a couple of years and then, you know, exited and nothing changed for the, you know, the long term. It might have changed in a short term, but then you have a new leader come in and everything changes again. I think, you know, setting an organization up so there is true like continuity over time of direction is absolutely key. So when you do that listening, make sure you get to really high, big stuff that will give you enough room for flexibility, but that you can continue coming back to that with continuity, and then being able to communicate, how are you doing that? And coming out with that. I think reinforcing those key concepts and messages and pieces throughout the organization is absolutely clear, is absolutely critical. As you talk about clarity and being clear, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of is as we talk about all this work, all this kind of program change and experience for students, it all comes back to our mission. Our mission is around inspiring each student every day. And you know, one of the things I'm most proud of as superintendent is that is so alive and well in every single employee here in our district. As we think about our bus drivers, our clerical staff, our nutrition services staff, our teachers, our paras, our leaders, and throughout the entire organization, it's like we're all taking on different roles, but we're here all, every single one of us, to inspire each student every day, which means we know our students, you know, we know the students and families and people that we're serving. We care about them. We're working from that point of inspiration, no matter what our role is. And, you know, part of that continuity over time is continuing to reinforce that as a superintendent. So, you know, one of my simple strategies, I meet with every single new employee that comes into our district. I meet with every clerical person, every food service person, every transportation person. And, you know, we pull a monthly group together to be able to talk about the importance of that direction and you know, what we do and who we serve, what our values are as we go forward, so that just lives and breathes inside the organization. And then, you know, I think having some things that are time bound with some of those big goals and directions so that you can chunk and prioritize as you go into that process. So, you know, if there's a new superintendent, you know, who's listening and coming in, I think you've got to give yourself a lot of time to be able to set direction and keep direction and momentum going. And, you know, you do want to keep evolving that. So it's not about just setting it and being done, but it's about setting it in a way that's large enough that you can continue to evolve it, keep it fresh and new while not changing the direction that you're going, so that you actually can move the needle in terms of the experience and outcomes that we want for our students and our families.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense. Well, today we've been talking with Dr. Josh Swanson, who's superintendent at Eden Prairie Schools, and talking about building community trust through the continuity of direction and really over time. Thank you so much for being with me today, Josh. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. Great to have a conversation.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.